Frank Muir goes into university and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A medical student was doing his final oral examination for his degree, and the examiner said to him, if a 24-stone woman was having fainting fits, what would you give her? The student said, plenty of room. An elderly don talking to a student.
I'm collecting together a series of my lectures to be published posthumously.
Oh, really? I should look forward to that. excuse me. I wonder if you could spare a cup. Good heavens. Hello.
Hello.
Frankers.
Hello.
Good heavens. Well,
Alfie,
well, well.
Alfie.
Haven't seen you since we were up at Trinity together.
No. Good heavens. Good Lord. What on earth have you been doing since you were sent down?
Well, I wrote a book, actually. I wrote a book called 100 Ways of Making Money.
Then why are you begging in the street?
That's one of the ways.
Right now, this tutorial is on Greek mythology. Can you tell me the name of the mythical creature that was half man and half beast?
Buffalo Bill. There was once an old don who dreamed he was giving a lecture, and when he woke up, he was. How do you do?
How do you do?
I don't go for all this institutionalised education, you know.
No?
None of your polytechnics or colleges or universities, none of that Oxford and Cambridge lot for me, you know.
No?
I went to the only university that counts. I went to the University of Life, mate.
Oh. Yeah. Well, how'd you get on?
Got sent down, didn't I?
conductor, does this bus go to Oxford?
No, it works for a living. A student was very unhappy with the standard of his digs, and he finally persuaded the landlord to come round and have a look at the state his room was in. It's the rats, he said. The rats, they're terrible. Now, look, just wait here quietly and watch that hole in the skirting board. They watched for a minute, and suddenly a trout poked its nose through the hole. The landlord was flabbergasted. Good Lord, he said, did you see that fish? The student said, oh, let's stick to the rats. We'll talk about the rising damp later on.
University education is treated with a degree of suspicion by almost all people who haven't experienced it, and by quite a few of those who have. Its value as a training for real life has often been questioned. There seems something mildly unhealthy about anyone devoting all his time to purely academic concerns. W. H. Auden.
To the man in the street, who I'm sorry to say is a keen observer of life, the word intellectual suggests straight away a man who's untrue to his wife.
And in the 18th century, Adam Smith attacked its outdatedness in his description of an English university.
A sanctuary in which exploded systems and obsolete prejudices find shelter and protection after they've been hunted out of every corner of the world.
There's also a general worry about what people actually get up to at universities. Is it all worthwhile? William Gahardy.
There are as many fools at a university as elsewhere. But their folly, I admit, has a certain stamp, the stamp of university training, if you like. It is trained folly.
There's more than a suspicion that students don't actually do anything. This certainly seems to have been true in the 18th century, during the college days of Edward Gibbon, the author of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
I spent 14 months at Magdalen College. They proved the most idle and unprofitable months of my whole life.
And here's an ambiguous extract from a speech by Baron Coleridge.
I speak not of this college or of that, but of the university as a whole. And, gentlemen, what a hole Oxford is.
Still, for those who have had a university education, the time they spent there is remembered with a rosy glow. College men are very prone to nostalgia.
College days, oh carefree days that fly, to thee we sing with our glasses raised on high. Let's drink a toast as each of us recalls ivy-covered professors in ivy-covered halls. Turn on the spigot, pour the beer and swig it, and Gaudeamus igit a tour. Here's to parties we tossed, to the games that we lost. We shall claim that we won them someday. To the girls young and sweet, to the spacious back seat of our roommate's beat-up Chevrolet. To the beer and Benzedrine, to the way that the dean tried so hard to be pals with us all. To excuses we fibbed, to the papers we cribbed, from the genius who lived down the hall. To the tables down at Maury's, wherever that may be. Let us drink a toast to all we love the best. We will sleep through all the lectures and cheat on the exams. And we'll pass and be forgotten with the rest. Oh, soon we'll be out amid the cold world's strife. Soon we'll be sliding down the razor blade of life. Ooh. But as we go our sordid separate ways, we shall ne'er forget thee, thou golden college days. Hearts full of youth, hearts full of truth, 6 parts gin to 1 part vermouth.
Tom Lehrer. The aim of a university education, from the student's point of view, should be to get a degree, a qualification that will be proof of his value in the outside world. Mind you, in the outside world, it's often other qualifications that count. Here's a definition by Ambrose Bierce.
Qualification, being a cousin of the president's tailor.
But academic qualifications are useful, particularly abroad. Lord Samuel.
Where there are 2 PhDs in a developing country, one is head of state and the other is in exile.
Final examinations are the distant threat to all university students. However much or little work they have done, very few face them with calm. It was all a lot easier in 1770 when Lord Eldon took his degree.
I was examined in Hebrew and history. What is the Hebrew for the place of the skull? Said the examiner. Golgotha, I replied. Who founded University College? I answered, King Alfred. Very well, sir, said the examiner. Then you are competent for your degree.
It's got a bit more difficult since, hasn't it? As well as providing mere paper qualifications, a university is supposed to teach students how to use their minds, how to be academic. I mean, there's more to it than you might think. Some advice from the Sunday Times.
Using a book, for instance. Most students will read a book from cover to cover. This is really a sensible way to tackle any book in a course of higher education, except possibly in literature.
How to use books and library systems properly is very much part of university education. Some things just aren't done in libraries. A report from the Daily Express.
People who persistently go to sleep in the reading room and browsers who rest on the floor at Widnes Public Library, Lancashire, will face a £5 penalty under new bylaws. Accidental catnappers and short-sighted readers who have to lie down to read titles on the bottom shelves will not be prosecuted.
Oh, tolerant Widners. Yes, it takes quite a degree of skill to use a library in the correct manner.
Good morrow, good librarian.
Oh, it's you. Oh, but you again. 7 reminders I've sent out to you.
My dear fellow, one cannot rush one's savouring of the classics of world literature. Rome was not built in a day, and its decline and fall cannot be read in one.
You haven't got Gibbon's decline and fall there.
That's got nothing to do with it. I've got the love life of the Caesars here. That tells me everything I want to know. And between you and me, I'm not surprised it declined and fell after that lot. Now, kindly shove the cards back in the sockets and give me the tickets.
Have you got all these books? How many tickets have you got?
2 fiction and 2 non-fiction.
Well, that's 4 tickets. There's 10 books here.
Yes, well, Dolly was on last time.
Do you mean Miss Hargreaves?
She may be Miss Hargreaves to you, but to people who she reckons, she is Dolly. And to me, she is Dolly. She always lets me have a few over the odds.
Well, that's 3 and 8 to pay on this lot.
3 and 8? I don't want to buy them.
Just a moment. Did you make this mark on this book?
No, I did not. I don't like eggs. Stand by with your date stamping machine. I shall return. Morning, everybody. charming. I was only passing the time.
Look, I must ask you to keep your voice down. Otherwise, I shall have to have you ejected. Now, what are you looking for?
I am looking for the crime section.
Well, it's over there, on the top shelf. Anything else?
Yes. I'd like Sir Charles Bestend's complete history of the Holy Byzantine Empire.
You want to borrow it?
Yes, please.
Well, I'm very pleased. I mean, we don't get much call for it. I'm so pleased there are still men of culture left. It is a marvelous edition.
Oh, yes, most useful.
I do hate to see it neglected.
Oh, I often borrow it. I find it most helpful.
Oh, I have misjudged you, haven't I? Is there anything else that I can find you?
Yes, Plato's Republic, the complete translation of Homer's Iliad, and Ulbricht, a Roman law. The Wilkinson edition, of course.
Oh, of course. It's a very wise choice. You've chosen probably the four best books we have in the library.
No, I agree. Have you got them?
Oh, well, of course. I'll get them. The first time in 4 years they've been asked for. Look, here we are. Oh, it's times like this that make my job worthwhile.
Thank you very much. They're the ones.
You can have all these on the one ticket. Oh,
thank you. You're most kind. Now, just to put them on the floor, please. That's it. Yes.
On the floor.
Yes. Give me a lift up there.
Right.
Give us a leg. Hoist us up a bit. Up. That's the little beauty I'm after. A lady don't fall backwards.
Tony Hancock, of course. As well as conferring qualifications and training minds, universities are famous for what is called student life. This is something that worries a lot of older people, bringing forth images of students throwing eggs at visiting dignitaries and sticking chamber pots on top of spires. Of course, students can be rowdy. Asa Briggs.
You couldn't expect universities to be quiet places in a society where there's an awful lot of noise.
Anyway, students have always been prone to excess. Here's a verse from James Miller, writing in the early 18th century.
Thence Christ's quadrangle took you for its own. Had Alma Mater e'er so true a son? Half 7 years spent in billiards, cards and tippling, and growing every day a lovelier stripling. With half a college education got, half clown, half prig, half pedant and half sot.
Well, universities do seem to have a strange effect on some people. For instance, Max Beerbohm.
Not that I had any reason for hating school. As strange as it may seem to my readers, I was not unpopular there. I was a modest, good-humoured boy. It is Oxford that has made me insufferable.
As well as being centres of student affectation, universities have also been fertile breeding grounds for humour. A lot of it considerably better than this famous example quoted by Charles Lamb.
An Oxford scholar, meeting a porter who was carrying a hare through the streets, accosts him with this extraordinary question. Prithee, friend, is that thy own hare or a wig?
Not bad, about, what, 150 years old? Now let's hear an authentic student reminiscence from a rather more sophisticated university-educated humorist, Woody Allen.
I went to NYU myself. I was a philo major there, too. I took all the abstract philosophy courses in college, like truth and beauty and advanced truth and beauty and intermediate truth and introduction to God, death 101. College, and I was thrown out of NYU my freshman year. I cheated on my metaphysics final. College, and I looked within the soul of the boy sitting next to me.
Woody Allen. The position of women at university is now firmly established. Indeed, most of the Oxford and Cambridge colleges, which were traditionally male preserves, are now co-educational. But the idea of educating women to any level, let alone to a very high level, used to cause deep concern. Here's a little verse by A.D. Godley.
A tangled web indeed we weave when Adam grants degrees to Eve. And much I doubt had Eve first Adam, if she'd have done as much for Adam.
Seems odd why people raise such objections to women being educated. Education can help, even if you believe women should stick to their traditional role, according to Rose Macaulay.
The more intelligent a woman is, the more brains she ought to bring to bear on her home. The Oxford and Cambridge colleges are excellent training schools for housewives.
I went to New York University, and I was in love in my freshman year. But I did not marry the first girl that I fell in love with because there was a tremendous religious conflict at the time. She was an atheist. And I was an agnostic, you know. We didn't know which religion not to bring the children up in.
Little more Woody Allen. The parents of young girls starting out at university are often very worried about the moral climate in which their offspring will find themselves. News from the Evening News.
There is a feeling that pregnancies among students at Leeds University are too high. But this is a passing phase. Next year it would be Liverpool or Sussex, the magazine says.
Maybe that explains this snippet from a girls' school magazine.
More precious even than those successes were the letters written to me by the principals of the colleges. One commented on the extraordinary all-roundness of the girls.
For a lot of girls, further education isn't a matter of university, but of secretarial training college.
Finished, Miss Posner?
Yes, sir.
Come. Mrs. Logan and Sins. Cringes Stroot Ofenbrough. Gintelman. Thank you for your litter of the sex tunes. We shall be hippy to the love of your odour. Miss Paisley?
Yes, sir.
You're improving.
John Cleese and Sheila Stiefel. But the activities of students pale into insignificance when compared to those of the people who teach them. Students come and go, but a lot of dons seem to go on forever. Quietly they flow. Some certainly behave as if they don't anticipate change within the next few millennia. From the student's point of view, dons can be pretty dull. Here's a definition from W.H. Auden.
A professor is one who talks in someone else's sleep.
Sitting in lectures can be a tedious business. Here's a little verse by Maurice Bishop, lines composed in Fifth Row Centre.
Of all the kinds of lecturer, the lecturer I most detest is he who finishes a page and places it behind the rest. I much prefer the lecturer who takes the pages as he finishes and puts them on a mounting pile as the original pile diminishes. But best of all, the lecturer who gets his papers in confusion and prematurely lets escape the trumpet phrase, and in conclusion.
Here's another anonymous one called Lectury.
The Don droned on. When you're scanning a line, it's the length of the foot you must find, while the student dreamed of the length of the legs of the girl in the row behind.
Now it is possible to have the benefit of lectures and indeed all the advantages of university without leaving your home. Thanks to that wonderful innovation, the Open University.
Now for some news of half-open university publications, available for just a few pence. To biology students, we recommend Teach Yourself How to Dissect by Arthur Sproat, parts 1 and 2. Parts 3 and 4 of Mr. Sproat will be published shortly. Also available, Trees in Autumn, a special loose leaf edition. Vertebrates, a hardback, and Invertebrates, no back at all. Firth of Forth, Before the Great Railway Engineers, unabridged. Finally, for those of you who haven't had time to finish The Killing of the Smallpox Virus, we may as well tell you it was Louis Pasteur who done it. Now part 3 of our course in acoustic wave propagation for Unit 5 of D Block at St. Mary's Hospital, Chiselwick, from Ada and all the kids at 47A. Professor Einstein speaks first.
Good evening. At this point, I want to look at sound. Unfortunately, I can't, so I shall have to listen to it instead. In particular, we're going to hear the sounds made by particular objects. First, we listen to a plane going faster than sound. There have been many clever inventions connected with sound, of course, but probably none is more famous than the one associated with the name of Alexander Graham Bell. Let's just refresh our memories about his celebrated experiment.
How are you getting on, Mr. Bell?
Well, if I'm right, this could be an historic turning point in the development of communications. Let's see.
Nigel Rees, Chris Emmett, Tim Davis, and Christine O'Zan in The Half-Open University. Dons are strange creatures. Here's H.G. Wells on the subject.
Perhaps there is something innate that in the first place disposes a man to become a university teacher or specialist. He is, I suspect, instinctively afraid of the insecure uproar of things. Visit him in college and you will see that he doesn't so much live there as lurk.
But dons are not all shrinking introversion. There's sometimes a touch of arrogance in the breed. A Balliol rhyme of the great Dr. Jowett, Master of Balliol, by H.C. Beeching.
First come I, my name is Jowett. There's no knowledge, but I know it. I am master of this college. What I don't know isn't knowledge.
It's an essential part of the accepted image of a don that he should be very, very old and very, very academic.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to announce that Bertrand Russell has kindly returned from the dead to be with us tonight for a few brief reminiscences of his early days at Cambridge. Thank you.
One of the advantages of living in Great Court Trinity, I seem to recall, was the fact that one could pop across at any time of the day or night and trap the then young G.E. Moore into a logical falsehood by means of a cunning semantic subterfuge. I recall one occasion with particular vividness. I had popped across and had knocked upon his door. "Come in," he said. I decided to wait a while. "Come in," he said once again. I opened the door accordingly and went in. And there was Moore, seated by the fire with a basket upon his knee. "Moore," I said, "do you have any apples in that basket?" "No," he replied, and smiled seraphically, as was his wont. I decided to try a different logical tack. "Moore," I said, "do you then have some apples in that basket?" Once again, he said no, leaving me in a logical cleft stick from which I had but one way out. "Moore," I said, "do you in that case have apples in that basket?" "Yes," he replied, and from that day forth, we remained the very closest of friends.
As Dr. Jonathan Miller, it seems very appropriate that the popular image of the don should be that of a philosophy don. Since a lot of people think that all academic research is pointless, they intend to home in on the discipline against which the charge of pointlessness is hardest to refute. Philosophy has always had a bad press. Ambrose Bierce.
Philosophy, a route of many roads leading from nowhere to nothing.
Oliver Goldsmith.
There is nothing so absurd or ridiculous that has not at some time been said by some philosopher.
Voltaire.
When he who hears doesn't know what he who speaks means, and when he who speaks doesn't know what he himself means, that is philosophy.
Right after the wedding, my wife started turning weird. She went to Hunter College, and she got into the philosophy department at Hunter, and she started dressing with black clothes and no makeup and leotards, you know, and she pierced her ears one day with a conductor's punch. You know? And she used to involve me in deep philosophical arguments and then prove that I didn't exist. You know?
Woody Allen. And here's an anonymous verse.
There once was a metaphysician who claimed that he didn't exist. But when he explained his position, they exclaimed, "Well, you'll never be missed."
Nowadays, philosophy has gone linguistic. What concerns philosophers, and philosophy dons in particular, is exactly what the words they use mean.
Yes, yes.
I mean, are you using yes here in the affirmative sense? You know?
No. No, you see, I like the paper. Like it? Because it has it there on something that I'm considering myself at the moment. Namely, what role we as philosophers have to play in this confusing, heterogeneous, confusing and confused jumble of political, social, economic relations we call society.
Yes, what?
Other people have jobs to do, don't they? I mean, what jobs do people do these days?
They chop down trees.
They chop down trees. They drive buses.
Yes, yes.
They play games. Now, we also play games, but as philosophers,
yeah,
we play language games. Games, apt language. Now, when you and I go out to the cricket pitch, we do so secure in the knowledge that a game of cricket is in the offing. But when we play language games, we do so rather in order to find out what game it is that we are playing. In other words, why do philosophy at all? Why? Why?
Seems to me, we want to ask ourselves, you see, not so much why questions, you see. We want to ask ourselves how questions.
Why?
Well, need I say more?
Jonathan Miller again with John Cleese. And that little bit of philosophy nearly brings us to the end of our university course. Before we go, let's have two more little snippets. First, from the University of London Bulletin, a problem concerning the degree of Bachelor of Humanities.
Convocation's objection arose from a conviction that the proposed new degree, when abbreviated to BHUM, would sound inelegant.
And from the Daily Mail,
speaking in whispers, Miss X told the jury, "He was surprised I was still a virgin, having been to university."
Well, next week we'll be going into languages as we start on a course of academic subjects. Until then, goodbye. See you after your tutors.
For cuppers, yes.
Right, oh, yes.